Hello. You're about to listen to Conversations. But before you do, please make sure to follow on all streaming platforms. That's including iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Audible. You name it, we're on it. Make sure you subscribe and follow. And welcome to episode 4 of Conversation, the unofficial Versailles-related podcast. I am Philippe Duc d'Orléans himself, Alexander Vlahos. And I'm joined, as always, by my brother.
Louis XIV, le roi.
Yes, very good.
George Blagden. Hello, everyone. And so, to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of our show, we are inviting on special guests each episode to help us take a deep dive into our hit Canal Plus, Netflix and BBC TV show.
Behind the scenes, conducting their own Grand Levier, is our very own personal pocket bon ton, producer Nicky Erbel.
And we're on to episode 4 now, Alex. Can you believe it?
We are.
And
I can.
I could not be happier to say that we have the magical, effervescent Louise de la Vallière herself, Sarah Winter.
Woo!
Hello.
Sarah Winter!
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
I wrote the intro and I was struggling to write effervescent. So that just shows you. But I really wanted to make sure that the listeners back home were isn't it a great word? But yeah, I was like, how best to describe Sarah and Louise de Valliere as a sort of like multi combo person? Where does one start and where does the other begin? You know, and
nobody knows.
Nobody knows, and that is what we call acting, kids. How are you, Sarah? Are you well?
I'm very good, thank you. I just got back from Paris, bizarrely. Yeah, I know. And went past Brissaman the other day and was just like, hey, could just nip in and do some extra filming. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they'd welcome any of us because they're doing the the other one.
Yeah, they are doing the other one.
So when you walk past Brie, could you believe that it's been 10 years since we were all donning the 1960s, 70s corridors of that studio?
I can and I can't. It does feel like a long time ago, but it's really weird. Like, bits of Versailles have kept popping up over the past 10 years for me, like people and bits of Versailles. So it's never really gone away. It's just sort of kept coming back into my life. So like just after filming Versailles, I went off to do another project in Budapest and I got there and I had no idea this was going to happen, but I walked into my costume fitting on the first day and Madeleine Fontaine was there, which was amazing. Oh, and then I walked into hair and makeup and Mathilde, Mathieu and Miguel, all from Versailles, were all there as well.
Was,
and they bought some of my hair pieces.
This was Casanova, right?
Yeah, amazing. It was.
Yeah.
So they were there. So I got a bit of Versailles back then. And then a few years afterwards, I got asked to be in a painting as Louise de la Vallière, and my dress had been sent over from the studios because my friend was doing an auction for the British Red Cross and she'd asked if I had any pieces or to donate, and Capodrama and Madeleine very kindly had sent over one of Louise's dresses. So I had it in my lounge, which was bizarre. And this painter said, could I paint you as Louise de la Vallière? He was doing sort of portraits and profiles of like a footballer and a musician, and he wanted to do me as an actor. So I got dressed back up, I had my hair and makeup all done again as Louise, and I was running around Regent's Park dressed in that dress.
Brilliant.
Wow. Yeah. He made a documentary.
How was that to dress back up into character? Was it cathartic or was it odd? Because if someone right now, in all honesty, just gave me Philippe shoes and told me to get into costume, put that wig on, I think I'd have a jump scare. I think I might have a mini heart attack or a stroke or both. Not because I wouldn't want to, but I think just the overwhelming emotions that would come with it. Because that's one question. George, you still own some of your jackets, right?
Yeah, no, I do. You're right. That, I just was trying to check in my head then. I was like, how many have I got rid of? Not got rid of, sorry. That I've auctioned some off for charity. And I think I've got one left. I think it's because it was my favourite. It was kind of like a midnight blue with lace over the top. Yeah. I mean, I've never put it on since I left set. It's just in the cupboard. It's
did
awful,
they give that to you or did you steal it?
We were, on the last day of season three, we were doing a photo shoot. I remember we were doing a photo shoot, which is the photo shoot of all of us on that fountain, George. And we were brought in a week after, or like a couple of days after we'd finished filming, but we hadn't had the wrap party yet.
Yeah.
Costume people came in and said, do you want to take anything? And I, at that time, I was incredibly eager to leave. The process, the whole thing. I was like, I'm done. I want to get out of here. I feel like I've got to get back to London and blah, 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 blah. And the only thing I took was the shoes, which was the shoes in episode one, where he says, oh, you spend 50,000 on shoes. And Philippe says, you know, well, you haven't seen the shoes. I was like, I'll take the shoes. And they ended up becoming like a glorified doorstop, like in my house that I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't have a shelf. I didn't have like things. It was just I don't know, it was maybe too soon. Maybe I should have put them in a cupboard and just put them away. Because right now, I'd love to see them, but I don't know where in God's name those shoes are. I think they've fallen away in a house move or a divorce.
Amazing.
I feel sad. I didn't get anything from set, but, you know, I temporarily had a dress, but then it went back off again.
You've always got to kind of like dance that balance, don't you, of like, not being accused of theft, but being just good enough friends with someone that they let you take something. But yeah, it's the only job I've ever been able to take anything home with me, because I'm not, front-footed enough with people and just be like, yeah,
On Merlin, we were all on season five, because it was the last, we were all given the cloaks, the Camelot cloaks. To give, like, all the Knights of the Round Table got given their cloaks.
Wow.
And it's just, honestly, it's beautiful, but it's the heaviest piece of fabric ever, right? And it would collect mud and rain, because it was, you know, it
trails like a proper cloak, like a cape kind of.
The cloak that would clip in here over your chainmail. So we all got given this in this sort of like duffel bag. And it was just, and it took up so much space.
Yeah.
Like you only think, oh, where can I put this? Like, logically, you either put it in an attic. I didn't have an attic at the time. So I'll put it under the bed. I couldn't even put it under the bed. I lifted the bed up off the floor. It was so chunky and big. Again, I like the idea of keeping stuff, but then getting rid of them. I'm like,
yeah. We were supposed to talk about it in the last episode, I think, and we didn't, but the portrait that I sent to Cassell.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Sorry, Sarah, just bear with us 10 minutes whilst we talk about one of the souvenirs we've set. No, but that portrait they gave me to take home, and it was too big to fit anywhere at my house, so it was in my mum and dad's house for a while. And they were classic parents, really, like, I said, can you just, like, can this live in the back of a cupboard in my bedroom? And the next time I went home, it was like, you walked through their front door in the hallway, and it was just... there.
Oh,
you walk into the house and they're like, oh,
did they?
Great. Yeah, no, I mean, wow. Very proud parents. I kind of
like that though, because it's it's you, but it's Louis, it's do you remember, George, that in, I don't know what season it was, I think it was two, potentially three, I can't remember now, but it was they made you a bust. They made a bust of your head.
It appeared on my, you know, marble? Photo memory thing. It appeared on the other day. I was like, wow, I completely forgot about that. A shot of me crouching down next to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And but it wasn't like, we'll do it like Louis' bust. They just got your face as a bust, which is, it's kind of mad.
It was mad, yeah. That was very lovely.
That's amazing. Go on, Sarah.
I was just saying, I don't own the painting that he did. It was almost life size. I think it was over 6 foot when it was in its. I'm not.
No way.
But in its frame, it was. But yeah. I went to see it at the Victoria Art Gallery in Bath, and it was next to a Gainsborough, and I was like, "This is mad." I don't know who has it. I don't know who's bought it, but if anyone's bought it, but
if there's anyone listening and who
knows, yeah.
Suddenly
know?
Conversation becomes like a treasure hunt podcast where we have to try and find the portrait.
It's an amazing kind of side hustle, though. I mean, not that that's what that was, Sarah, obviously. But, like, do you know what I mean? Like, there must be loads of artists throughout the country who want to do, like, a portrait of Henry VIII or something. And you think, I could go and
see. Get the actor who played Henry VIII.
No, but do you know what I mean?
It,
what an amazing thing to sort of, like, be asked to inhabit someone for that purpose. Must have been.
It was strange to put the dress on and sort of try to conjure her back up again, because he wanted me to sort of capture her, an overriding sense of her general mood. Which was at the time of the show was quite sad. So I was thinking, I was holding like autumn leaves and sort of in Regent's Park looking kind of melancholic, and then running in slow motion. Not actually running in slow motion.
No, for sure.
So there's a little documentary that goes alongside it of the painting done, and then me talking as Louise. So that was bizarre, because she came back again. So yeah, there's just been, and then we did the music video, obviously not last year.
We did do the music video. Yeah,
yeah.
I brought Louise de Valier and the Chevalier together in a non-design related music video. And we did that. So yeah, there's because I think I find it really interesting when we bring on people. Like someone like last week's episode, which was with Pip. Pip's character had such a is deeply rooted in the Versailles fandom, and is Cassel is loved. You love to hate him. You love the person and all that. You always hope. I think from my perspective, I don't know about you, George. I always hope that Versailles has meant something to that person, because it has meant something to both of us, like an incredible amount. How do you feel about Versailles, Sarah? Is it a good memory? Is it a bad memory?
Oh, yeah.
And full disclosure, if you've listened to episode 1 or 2 of this podcast, you'll know that me and Alex had a lot to say. You can say whatever you want, you know. We're not. I've wanted so far. So.
We've done good and bad on this, so yeah, for sure.
I think, for me, I'm like obsessed with period dramas and have been since I was a kid, so... You know, I watched the Downton Abbeys and everything. So for me, this was like a dream come true to get to dress up and go and immerse myself. And the detail in everything was so extraordinary all the time. And I think you guys have talked about that, but it felt like, have you ever seen a Punch Drunk show? You know, the immersive theatre, you know, like that, where you can just open anything and find like the book's actually got writing in it. And there's just so much detail. So for me, it was like being in an immersive theatre experience. Like, great. You know, I don't know, I just loved it. And I loved history at school, so I got to just nerd out and read loads of stuff about Louise. So, and
I remember this being, kind of my first, I guess my first real memory of you, Sarah, was how...
being a nerd.
Nerding out. But yeah, in a really cute way, don't worry. It was a really cute way. But how diligent and how thorough you were about your character, and how much you were tapping into the research and the reading about it and all that sort of stuff. Did you is that something that you always do with characters, or is it just because this was available to you for Louise de Valier, or is that, do you know what I mean?
I mean, if it's historical and there's stuff I can read, then I will. It's one of my favorite parts of anything I get to do, is getting to go and research and find out stuff about people that I would never have really known. And we didn't do this period of history at school, and, you know, in my degree, I didn't do this. So to find out about her, and she was so fascinating, like even more than you see in the show. You see her at the tail end of their relationship. You don't get to see all the really cool stuff that she could do. Like, she was an amazing, she was like quite a tomboy when she was younger, because she'd grown up in the country, and she was an amazing horse rider. She could ride like bareback. She, you know, she did all this really cool stuff. And I don't know, I just wouldn't have known anything about her had I not done the show. So I'm really grateful for that opportunity. I've literally got all the books here, like in a stack, that I went through to go. I mean, there was so much.
How many are there? Show it to those patron viewers that can.
This one's the best. This one's called Love and Louis, and it's by Antonia Fraser, and it's incredible. Fraser, yeah. Really good. I was told to read this, Sex with Kings, which is a great book.
Great.
By Eleanor Herman. Yeah.
I wonder what that's about. I have no idea.
and then this really confused me. This is called Mistress of the Sun by Sandra Uland, and it's historical fiction. And it was really dangerous reading that, because obviously it's based on Louise, but it's, you know, embellished a lot. Yeah. And it was quite dangerous because I read that and I really loved so much stuff that was in it. So I had to keep cross-referencing to try and check that anything I liked was actually true. I mean, there was a lot in there, but if anyone wants to read that, that's a fantastic book.
did you have, like early on before we started or even while we were starting, were you talking to David and Simon, the writers, about what you'd learned, or had you just, did you trust what they were giving you and you were trying to implement it on the side? Because for you know, I've talked about this in many interviews over the time, is that there wasn't a lot written about Philippe because of what Lydia was like. So I had kind of free rein, which was good and bad. You know, there was nothing historically that I could pin myself down to. Whereas George, we've talked about this. You said, you know, there was, everyone had an opinion because Louis the 14th is incredibly documented. So I always trusted the script and just was like, if it's in the script, I'll do it. And if it's not, I'm not going to request it. But was that something that you would talk to David and Simon about or any of the writers?
Yeah, definitely. Because, well, I don't know if you know this, but I never auditioned to play Louise. I auditioned to play Henriette. Yeah.
Look
at
that. Wow.
Do you see my face right now? Do you see my face?
Yeah.
This is what?
Love this podcast.
Yeah, I never spoke about this. I the first audition I did was in Suzanne Smith's office, as most of us, in King's Cross. I think Sophie Holland, lovely Sophie Holland, was in there as well. Yeah. And then apparently they had me pegged as Louise. That's what I've been told from that point. But nobody told me that. And then a few weeks later, I happened to be in Paris and I got this call. I was just there for a weekend. I'm always going there. I love Paris. Yeah. And I got this call when I was sitting outside a cafe in Montmartre, eating a croissant, going, "Hi, you're apparently in Paris. Will you come down to the offices today and do all the screen tests for the people up for Louis?" Not George. you weren't there. I don't think you had auditioned at that point.
No.
So they were like chemistry reads.
Amazing. I can't wait.
With Jaleel. Yeah.
Honestly, and my face again, right now.
Yeah,
aghast.
Listeners. He's aghast.
Yeah, for the listeners, you can't understand. You can't. I can do a. I can do that. That'll show people. But that's.
Yeah.
So you got to read opposite. So first on Henriette. So you auditioned for her, and then they brought you in to read, to screen test, or like to be the audition person for potential Louis.
Yeah, as Henriette again.
Wow. So, Sarah, denial confirm. Have I asked you this yet, Alex? But
No.
I don't think I've invented this. But I think Evan, I mean, which definitely sounds like I've invented it, right? I think Evan was like a serious contender for Louis.
No.
Evan
you didn't remember reading opposite him?
Uh-uh.
Evan auditioned for Philippe.
Okay,
that's,
there we go.
That's
yeah. Yeah, I haven't forgotten it.
No, Ev auditioned for Philippe, and then immediately they were like, "You're a chevalier, or you're the chevalier from the get-go. not a chevalier. You're the thing. Yeah,
you are the amazing chevalier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't speak any of Louise's words until the first day I was on set. I hadn't had a rehearsal. They just trusted that I could do it, which I don't know whether they should have done. But yeah, they just. So I'd conjured her based. That's one of the reasons I read so much, was because I had, like, I don't know if we had two scripts to go on at the beginning, the two first two episodes.
We had episode one and two together.
So I just had that, and then my reading, and not even a trial practice of.
That's quite nice though, because it's only happened a couple of times in my career where you've done exactly what you've just described, where you get cast in a role that you didn't audition for, and I've actually preferred it because. Whenever I get to the scene that I auditioned with in any role I've ever done, I can't not do what I did in my audition. Like he says,
I'm
supposed to be a professional actor who can obviously do what's required. But like you get to it and you're like, oh, it's got all of this ghost stuff of stuff that I did that was naff because I was really nervous. And I would much prefer to like, there must be some positives to just coming to the role and not having done it in any kind of chemistry read environment or an audition, you know.
Yeah, there definitely were some positives, but an actor who I won't say, they were trying to be helpful, whispered to me on that first day of filming, make her, and I can't remember whether they said make her sassier or make her stronger, or they gave me some note that was to do with that, and it plagued me for the rest of the shoot and beyond.
Of course it did. An actor
said that to you, not a director.
Yeah, not a director. An actor. I don't want to say who it was because I genuinely think they meant really well. I think they were trying to be like, this is you establishing who she is for the rest of the time that you're going to play her. So maybe they wanted the character. I don't know, but it's because all the stuff I'd read about her and in the script, you know, she had this soft voice and that she was very gentle and she was seen as sort of the pet of the court. And so I'd very much sort of channeled all that into her and made her very softly spoken and, you know, and very gentle. And so that suddenly got in my head and then was like, I should be making her stronger. But I didn't actually, I stubbornly stuck to my to my guns for right or for wrong and kept with, you know, what was there in script and what was in my research. So well I don't done, know if that was the right
yeah,
thing
well
to do.
Done. But, yeah, well done.
Thanks.
We've talked actors, about how, you? Like, you know, I failed, well, not failed, but I found that hard to do with Louis, you know, with having other opinions. And you've just reminded me that someone in the first block of episodes did the exact same thing.
Was another
same
actor?
Same person. Came up to me on set during a big
later.
Group scene. And this actor came up to me and went, I see what you're doing. No one else does, but I think I see what you're doing. And I think it might work.
Oh, no.
And I just remember being there in this group being like, I mean, it plagues you, doesn't it? You're there in like episode 14 of second season and you're like,
still thinking about that one
shoulder.
Moment. Yeah, for sure.
It might work.
Oh my God. And the fact that you can still remember exactly what they said to you, it just shows how they
I'd actually like completely forgotten about it until you brought that up.
I'm so sorry.
No. But like, as you do, you know, you just forget. No, but like, you go, oh yeah. And I, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's weird, isn't it? It's hard because you want to, it's such a weird thing filming because you want to, it's a perfect environment set up to not collaborate with people in contrast to like, you know, theatre or dance. You know, the filming environment is one that's like, you all have your own, well, if you're, you know, lucky enough, you have a shared or at least sort of own, you have your own space, your own trailer, and you come to set and you're sort of like satellites all moving on your own at times and you have to work hard to collaborate with others. And then as soon as like someone gives you an opinion on the way that you want to work, I'm always this, like if I'm on set with another actor, it's like, are you going to do it like that? You immediately are like, what?
Well, I think you're right. I think it has to stem from the top. It has to stem from a director. It has to stem from the producers. It has to stem from the showrunners. And also, it is a collaborative thing. It has to be something where you both have to try and figure out like a way to meet in the middle. Or I say both, if like two people in the scene, if there's 16 of you, then that's 16 people's opinions. Like, just as an example, like I've only ever fallen out with Evan once on throughout our entire three seasons. And we fell out because he wanted to do something, and when he was trying to get me to do something that he wanted specifically. He wanted me to do, he's like, could you be here for this? Because this is what I want from the scene. And I was like, well, no, I'm going to stand over here by this window because that's what I want. And it was, do you know what it was? It was 5:40 a.m. and we were in a cold Breeze Studios and it was doing season two and neither of us wanted to be there at that time. And we were fuming. We were just grumpy with each other. But you're right. You orbit as sort of solitary beings and you just hope to God that your ideas match. Because George, you've talked about it with Ty. Ty was very much someone that knew his character, stuck to his guns, and was like, this is how I'm going to play the scene. I'm going to stand here. This works for me. Which is super fucking admirable, but also sometimes not as collaborative as you want it to be, you know? Not as, like, as malleable as you want the piece to be, you know? But I do think it comes from directors. Yeah. I think directors and crew and showrunners can offer that space up to you in the morning or in the day and say, this is your time to figure this out.
Well, I think as well, like, the point you raise about Ty is like, that's more about his process as an actor, which, again, like, if you have, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks rehearsing in a, maybe, like, an environment, like, rehearsing for theatre, you sort of adhere to the same, you kind of work out what your communal group process is, and you sort of have to adhere to that, otherwise the thing that you're trying to create doesn't work. Is that whereas in film world you can have completely separate and contrasting and different ways of working, which makes it vibrant and exciting, and you can amalgamate all of those in the post-production phase, can't you? And it's just, I find it fascinating. Sorry, we've gone on waffled on again, Sarah.
We've gone waffling.
Me, sorry, I said we. Me, George has.
I was going to say, George, you did this thing, I think it was when we were filming episode 2 on the night shoot, where I think you thanked like everybody at the end of the night shoot for like supporting you in that scene, because you had that big long speech to do.
Your check's in the post, Sarah.
But it was just, I was like, that's how it should be, you know, as in the sense of, sort of setting the tone for collaboration and being grateful that everyone's putting the work. I don't know, I just remember that so clearly that I was like, wow, what a leader.
I forgot I did that. I probably forgot I did that because it was out of a place of just, I get obviously embarrassed when I feel like people are having, I think that night, I remember, was it the speech to Moncore? It was like the first
I am the state scene, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I was just conscious that basically, of the 9-hour shoot, 7 hours of it for everyone else was just sat in the same position. Listen, and that, I think
we were amusing ourselves. We were picking at the food on the like those towers. That's fine.
Right. Yeah. So let's capitalize on having the effervescent Sarah Winter here, and let's go into it. Let's go into episode 4. So I've got a couple of notes and you guys can chime in, but the anecdote that I've got is obviously we start with Louis having this brilliant cut on his head. And a question actually came in from one of the patrons, which I think we can actually from Darlene. And I think George, you could possibly answer this. Let me just find you very quick. I should have been more prepped. Yeah. Patron question from Darlene Clare. How did Louis' face get wounded in the opening scene of episode 4?
Mm-hmm.
Because it gets brushed off by Bontom. Did you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Thanks, Sarah. It's good to have you on. Was the scene cut?
I was shocked.
To explain
I was shocked when I rewatched it because I 100% remembered this being in the edit when I watched episode 4. Whenever it was, 7 years ago. I remember episode 4 starting with a GoPro. They had like a gimbal GoPro shot on a rider.
Right.
Episode 4 was supposed to open with, and I thought it was in it. And when I rewatched it, obviously it's not. Of like a POV shot of someone riding on a horse and you didn't know who it was. And they hit their head on a branch. Pretty dull, mundane answer. He basically hit his head on a branch whilst riding. But it was like
brilliant.
This
it's kind of nice
stylized, shot that.
Yeah.
And they shot it. I remember watching it. So maybe someone showed it me. I just remember it being in the episode. But
because it's an odd start for everything. But then I think I quite like it because like Louis gets a little tiny cut on his head from the branch, and then you've got Philippe at war. Walking, you know, bumping into a guy with, you know, limbs in a bag, which is just so harrowing, which obviously Simon explained what that story was.
Hello, everyone. I'm so sorry to interrupt this fantastic conversation with the effervescent Sarah Winter. I love that word, especially for her. But more importantly, very importantly, I'm here to tell you that we have, for this wonderful podcast, a Patreon page. If you visit www.patreon.com and type into the search bar Conversations, you will find a way to subscribe to this lovely, lovely podcast that we're doing. And you'll get access to loads of bonus features, and there's lots of extra information about the podcast that you'll get through there. And it would really, really help and support Alex and I and our wonderful producer, Nikki. So, what are you doing? Don't hesitate. Please go to www.patreon.com, search for Conversations. And now we'll go back to chatting to the lovely, effervescent Sarah Winter. Bye!
I loved my time not in the studio. I always remember just enjoying my time away from the studio, which is odd because for someone who likes control, like I do on set, I love things to be like on time and I love that people can be good at the jobs and stuff as an actor. Being on location, as we all know, that's when variables get put into the mix, like weather and just loads of stuff, right? I loved my time with Christoph because it was me and for one or two scenes, Alexi Michalik, playing Rohan. But like I just got to like spend this whole, I was like 4 days in this field, this just empty field with horses and extras and stuff. And Christoph would just get the camera up, just shoot stuff. And I'd go, what scene is this? No, it didn't have any dialogue or anything per se. He would want me to wander through these trees with like someone screaming. And I'd go, yeah, all right, fine. And I just did it. And he'd get the camera up and just shoot it. And it was like I was making this sort of like this off-piste noir, like independent film about
maybe
war.
He did. Maybe he put them all together and he has his own film somewhere.
Do you know what? Knowing Christoph Shrew, I would not put that past him, actually. But it was weird. And also I remember turning up to set in the morning and seeing all of these amputees, like people that had missing limbs. Proper missing limbs, and they were dressed up as war, as you know, as battle victims, and they were just speaking to them in French, like you there with the one arm, could you just move down closer to camera, and they put pink blood on him, and it was just like it was just odd because for the first time for me it was the show that I didn't think I could ever experience that well. In those first three episodes, I thought that Philippe was very much stuck in walking down corridors and shouting at people. So it was just, I had the best time with this mad German director just going, get the camera up, shoot over there, and all right.
You guys have some great scenes in this episode. Like, really, it's such a powerful opening where you're so angry coming down the corridor, like, George, and then, you know, all the battle stuff is amazing. It's and that last scene with the porridge is fantastic.
The porridge scene, yeah.
Ahead.
No, and you have skipped Sarah. You're
so
off.
Sorry.
Turn the mic off. She skips ahead. No, but it was weird. Like, obviously, rewatching it, I'm like, I always remember 4 and 5 being really heavy for me, like in terms of like stuff. But actually, like I'm in one scene at the start, and you don't see me until 42 minutes into the later the episode, which I think is kind of good actually, in those regards, because you get to focus on other things. We also get to see Fabien, which is in his like CSI mode, walking through the shootings of the Parthenays. I love that when he's like an investigative, like he's very much Sherlock Holmes in this, isn't he?
Yeah, you know that bit where he's figuring out the angle of the gun? All the like Sherlock workings out on the screen at the same time.
And I guess you get to finally see with that character a sense of, humanity. Is that the right word I'm looking for? I don't know. Maybe it is. But
more complex workings, interior, internal. Yeah.
It's great. It's really great. And it's because, up until then, we've only seen sort of Fabien be this sort of bloodthirsty butcher, really, and a punisher. Yeah. And then finally we get to see this sort of, this lovely little sweet side. Gets a couple of tears in his eyes, doesn't he?
And that bit when the youngest Parthenay dies in his arms and she says something like, I can see angels. And then she dies. It foreshadows for me the Henriette scene later when she's, towards the end of series one, which is one of my favourite things. Because I did watch series 2 and 3 because I was loyal to you all. I wanted to see what happened.
You being a fan.
But I think that is my favourite thing, that death scene I've watched in anything ever. I think it was so heartbreaking. I sobbed so much, maybe because I knew you all, but also I thought it was extraordinary. And the lines, what did she say? The flowers are singing or something.
The flowers are singing. It's,
It makes me want to cry.
I remember Simon Mirren, that was all Simon's stuff, because Simon told me this story about when people are on their, like on their last breath, they become blind, like they literally lose the all the senses are dropping. So like they lose the sight, and your body is literally shutting off different rooms, like shutting off the sight, shutting off the smell, and the last thing is and the last thing to go is your sight. So the idea is that the last thing that people tend to say is what they're seeing, like literally mm-hmm. like the thing before the thing, and that's a Simon Mirren trait. So like, yes, you're right. So like, seeing the Parthenaise girl, I see angels. Yes, but you can tell sometimes. You can tell that it's a Simon Mirren. But like, I've been wrong in the past. Every time I've gone, that was your line, wasn't it? He's gone, no, that was David's. So I might be wrong. Ooh, God, was that me? That was me.
Can I ask a question about that scene with Henriette's death that I don't know? Were they real flowers? Yeah. Were they real flowers that they brought in?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. I want to say, my brain immediately went yes, but now I'm like, hang on.
So they had these, they looked like mini hedges that walked us down the aisle. You know those ones? So those were, I remember, being plastic because mm-hmm. they were just green. They were just shrubbery. They had no petals. Yeah. But the actual flowers, the white and the things that were boistered up, they were real because it smelled. I know we're skipping ahead, but like, Jesus.
I'm so sorry.
No, I know. But I walked in that morning, came into a rehearsal. It was just me, George, and Noemi, and Daniel Roby, the director. And we knew it was such a complex, heavy scene. It's also Noemi's last day of filming. So that was just like, it was a double whammy of, do you remember that? It was her last week. She got a golden wrap in bed. It was just insane. Aww. And it was almost like we were saying goodbye. It was very close to the end of filming everything. I came around the corner with my sides and my hand rehearsed. And I walked into that room and I burst into tears straight away. Before we even said a word, because I saw what they did with the set. I just was like, good God, you know? And
It was really so overwhelming, wasn't it? Because that, 100%. A, it's a pretty big bedroom to start with. Like, as bedrooms go. But like, as in, you know, it's a lot of empty space.
No, my big room
is two rooms. Right. And it's a lot of empty space, usually, that he just struts around getting angry in. And so then to just walk through the doors and every square inch of that floor be covered and the walls and it was really like shocking, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, a few bouquets here or there. It was a sea of flowers.
Yeah. And I think in that moment, I you know, there's many moments during the filming of season one, especially where I was like, oh, this show has money. Does that make sense? Like, oh, this is a big budgeted show. That mm-hmm. was one of those moments where I was like, they've literally gone. Like every square inch of it that was covered in flowers, and you just thought they could have done it in post, or they could have, you know, done it like with camera angles and made it look busy and just moved this thing. But they literally wanted that one big top shot where I walk through the corridor and George is already there, and it just pays off so, and also Noemi's performance is just incredible in it.
You like all of you are just like you can see like raw emotion so much. It's just it's really extraordinary, and the fact that she says that she doesn't want to die. Like so often, I feel like in shows, they write it so that to almost comfort the audience that the person's accepting that they're going, that they're ready to go or whatever.
Oh, but
the fact that she doesn't want to die and that she says that is what broke me most.
There was one line that was written and I can't remember it verbatim. And it would be the line that would immediately make me to go, which is, she said like something like, I'm so scared of the dark, or something along those lines. Where, and my Philippe's response is, can you remember before you were born?
Yeah.
So then you have no reason to be scared, which is such a, I mean, meticulously sort of intellectual answer to someone who's on their deathbed. But it was always very, and I just the way that Noemi was in that day, she was just, I mean, it's kind of like one of those easy, not saying easy days. Sorry, Noemi, if you're listening, it's not an easy day, but the idea of when you spend the whole day in bed, she didn't have to move. It means that you can concentrate on your performance, isn't it? I think, right?
Yeah.
Like if no one's handing you a candelabra or a letter or something to write or putting your shoes on. It's just,
or a whip.
Or a whip. Yes. Or a whip. Yeah. Oh, that's good. So I want to talk to you, Sarah, because we have you on, about your time on the show with all the girls and stuff like that, and how you, and mm-hmm. well, not just the girls, your scenes with you have a wonderful scene with George, but like can you talk us through that, both of you, because I'm, you know, I think me and you, Sarah, had one scene together, but you two have obviously many scenes. So like, how mm-hmm. talk about that scene and if any stories. And I know you had your pregnant belly under the corset, so we can talk about that a bit.
That pregnant belly, what was amazing about that was that they the prosthetic of it was so incredible. They sort of matched the veins on my own stomach to it so much that when I got changed in the evening, it was very confusing. When I took my corset and dress off, it looked so realistic, but nobody got to see that on the show. And I think you could almost forget that Louise was pregnant for a lot of the time because it was just covered. But I knew, yeah. And I was doing like pregnant acting sometimes. And I think people must have thought, what's she doing? Because I would like, you know, push myself off a chair like I was struggling a little bit. Because you see, couldn't see the pregnant belly. They probably just thought Louise is really bad at just standing up.
Standing up. She's just got really weak ankles.
She's just lazy.
I didn't realise until that, like with Louise Lavalliere, I didn't realise that the corsets were kind of designed to hide. Like, I think we talked about, or like, because it wasn't... showing that much. As in, you know, it's not like what we would see in like a modern day thing. They were actually designed to like push the baby lower than
it should be,
if you know what I mean.
Everything, you know, even supposedly like in just a corset without being pregnant would reshape the body and reshape the organs because they were so tight, apparently. So God knows what it would have done to a baby. That's, you know, and I mean, I had the belly and then they would do the corset up over the top of it. So I was very tightly packed in.
I remember them painting the veins on, though. It was kind of like a really light blue, really faint blue. I remember it on Anna, spoiler, but like Anna's character becomes pregnant in the show as well. Yeah. And it was really, like you said... Okay. No, I'm just saying it was really disconcerting. I don't think I ever was like up close with your pregnant prosthetic, but like the prosthetic work on the show was so good that I think Anna's was a whole like swimsuit, like it was like because she had a fake upper body as well, like, and she would, I mean, classic Anna, like, just, you know, so brave. She would like walk onto set. It was a bodysuit. Like, no, she'd just walk onto set. Yeah, because it just was like wearing like a swimsuit. But yeah. Because it was so realistic. You just didn't like your brain wouldn't accept that it wasn't.
I can remember that day when with Anna's ones. We were filming, you know, like they tend to do on the show. They tend to do all the sort of the sex scenes kind of in one or two days, don't they? So they have close set days where George will do a couple of scenes in the day and then me and Evan would go off in the afternoon and do the close set scenes of that. And I can remember like coming down to do mine and Evan's scene and you and Anna were just finishing coming out the water in season two. And she was outside having a cigarette in the sort of alleyway between the two sound studios, just with no robe or anything or just nothing, and just stark bollock naked, but having a cigarette with his pregnant belly, because she was wearing a costume, and it was the most terrifying thing because you instinctively want to run up and put clothes on her. You really want to just dress her and go, what are you doing?
I'm sad that no one got to see that detail of the belly. I just think, you know, because it was such good work, good artwork.
Yeah, of course.
Go on,
Sarah. Go on.
I was just going to say, you know, you could see their work on the scars on my back, which I thought, you know, that was really impressive the way they'd done that. But I don't know if you noticed this. I don't know if anyone's noticed this when they're watching, but I've seen that scene with me and Elise walking around the chair, you know, in the Queen's room. Quite a lot of times because it was on my showreel for a while. Right. So I've seen that scene a lot. But there's a bit where she's looking at my back and she says, you know, I don't know whether she says, what have you done to yourself or something. No, it's not that line. She's looking at my back and my back twitches in response exactly where she's looking. There's this weird muscle spasm on my back exactly the moment that she's looking at it. And I obviously wasn't aware of it when that was happening, but when they edited it, they probably went, ah, yes, there's some
acting in her back. I would get that on your CV immediately, Sarah. I would get that on your CV immediately.
Because you obviously,
can do backting.
What episode is it where we actually get to see Louise Lavalliere properly flailing herself? And is that episode two or three of this season? I think it's episode two.
I think it's episode two, I think so.
Did you, in terms of that, was, and obviously all your prep and stuff like that, with how was, you know, because I'm always amazed by the, like, the makeup department, the wigs and the props and stuff like that. Like, you know, there's a scene later on that has gold macaroons and it, like, the attention to detail in the prop department. With you flaying yourself, did you, this is going to be a weird question, did you have support? Not support, but, like, was anyone around to, like, to help you, and, like, the scars and the blood and everything like that? Like, what was that?
Yeah. That was very interesting, because they, I realised only about an hour or so before I went to set that no one had actually shown me how to whip myself. So I asked the props department to get...
No one had told me or taught me how to whip myself.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I love that.
Which was, and because she was doing it so regularly, you know, it was part of, you know, how she was living at that time. She was doing that as a regular occurrence. So I needed it to not look like I was learning how to do it as I did it in the scene. So I asked them if they could go and get the prop so I could practice on my own in the trailer. So I spent an hour on my knees whipping myself.
Oh my God. Wow, that is amazing. Like, that can you imagine that prop master, like, being like, sorry, what? Are you sure? Do I need to tell, like, a producer or something? Or,
can you imagine, like, if you're in unit base and you're just walking past Sarah's trailer and all you hear is whoosh,
whoosh. I know. Like, I mean,
I wonder what's going on in there.
But do you know what's weird is that the leather itself on the sort of tassels at the end was very soft, so that didn't hurt at all. And if I'd been doing it properly, it would have literally just sort of tickled. But because I didn't know that you had to lift it up and over your shoulder for it to not, I kept hitting my shoulder really hard at the front with the sort of the end of it, the stick. And so I ended up with all these bruises on my shoulder from not doing it properly. And then I got to set and someone said, why don't you just lift it up? And I went, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks.
And then,
yeah.
And then
after watching you for 20 minutes hitting yourself going, should I say something?
To be fair, if you'd requested the whip and an instructor to head to your trailer, yeah, I think that would have been... probably
would have been
worse.
Even worse.
Do you know what
yes,
I mean?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. That is true. That would have caused more alarm bells than just doing it yourself. Very good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they designed it so it shouldn't have hurt me. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, I think for Louise, it was such an integral part of her character that she did that, because, I mean, later on in her time at Versailles, she started wearing a hair shirt under her corset as well.
Yeah,
so that she was in pain all the time. I mean, she really, really didn't like herself very much. And she wrote, I've got this book here, hang on. She wrote this entire treatise. My God, this is a long title. It says The Penitent Lady, or Reflections on the Mercy of God in the Form of Prayers, written by Louise de la Vallière on her retirement from the court of France. And she wrote this whole book, basically, of prayers and sort of reflections about her life in court and how terrible it was that she was engaging with it. And how bad she felt about it. So
that's amazing. That's amazing.
It's, wow. To have these words, it's very difficult because it's all been sort of translated and scanned and it's very hard to read. But the bits I could read were just, it made me feel so bad for her that she felt so bad for her relationship with Louis. But she loved him so much and she just didn't want him to be the king. She just wanted to run off with Louis into the sunset.
Talking about running off into the sunset, you got to do one of the very earlier scenes of filming outside Versailles with Anna and George and with George and Noemi passing and stuff like that. Was that like, I always remember, like, my first day on Versailles, the actual palace, and not really taking it for hugely for granted. Like, it took me until season two, I think, or even season three, when my dad and my stepmom came to visit and they were like, Alex, look around, look how incredible this is. And I was like, oh yeah, because it became the office. Do you have any, you know, your day with Anna, like, was that fun doing all that sort of stuff, like waving and being on the sort of the checkered floor of Versailles?
Yeah, I mean, that was crazy. That was the day that I also felt the enormity of the scale of everything. And I think it was also raining that day, and so they had a limited time for us to get the lines out before it would start raining again. So they were ushering all the extras with umbrellas away and then coming back. So the pressure suddenly was like, everybody's here. This is huge scale. We're actually at Versailles and we've only got, you know, a few minutes before it starts raining again. And I think I forgot my lines for the first time a couple of times because I just got overwhelmed by the scale of everything. Going, oh my goodness, how much money are they spending? And how much money is every minute costing if I forget my line? Oh my God, I've forgotten my line.
that can happen, can't it? With all the pressure and stuff like that. Let's just before we finish up with you, Sarah, we've got I want to talk a bit, obviously, because George, we're going to be leading into the war stuff, but like, George, do you remember, you mentioned it earlier, Sarah, the famous porridge scene, but just before that, I always remember like of thinking that, being so excited about going out into location and being picked up in the car to go and do these scenes, these war scenes with you, and realizing that they were actually filmed in the car park at Brie-sur-Man. Do you remember that?
I didn't tent experience stuff. That until a bit later, but like, oh no, yes, you're right. The tent stuff was in the tent car park.
Yeah.
But I mean, most of my Battlefield stuff also was against that green screen in the car park.
Right.
There was
I remember being really disappointed. That's all I remember. I remember going, oh, I can't wait to get, because I've done all the stuff with Christoph and then I knew that I was like, you're just going to come and join me. And then suddenly I'm outside Brie and it's in the car park and they've just got a couple of tents on these sort of slats. thinking, what the? And they were like, and they're doing this big crane shot, but the crane shot, what I was seeing on the monitor, they didn't put a green screen up. The crane shot was just the studios. And I was like, what the heck's going on?
Yeah,
and then you obviously watch it back in the edit, and then they put in all the battlefields in the background and stuff. But I was just thinking, what's going on? But
that green screen sequence was the first time that I remembered, like, massive name drop here. I'm sorry, it's more on them than me. But like, when I was at drama school, all my teachers would reference this incredible graduate who'd just gone out from Guildhall and got this job that was mainly on green screen, Orlando, on Lord of the Rings. And just, they would always reference him on the set of Lord of the Rings, because he still talked to them, apparently. Right. And about how, like, this is what our training's about, you know? You're going to be working for weeks at a time in a green screen box, pretending to see 1,000 orcs chasing towards you. And I was really earnestly like into it at drama school, but then I remembered it and I just couldn't not laugh. Like, I'd not thought of it until that point where we were in the car park at Brie with this green screen, because Mike Barker, it wasn't Mike. Who was it?
Yeah, it wasn't Mike. Christoph.
No, so sorry. My memory's going like this. I'm so sorry. I didn't do any of the green screen war stuff.
I did our
scene in the tent in the car park, but I did loads of green screen war stuff in the car park on season two. Skipping ahead a bit, sorry. But it was Mike Barker, and Mike literally was doing that thing with a megaphone from the tent. Yeah, yeah, now there's 400 soldiers charging towards you, and you know that the shot's here, and that everyone's just watching, like, green behind your head and your face, and so you're just trying to, like, convey 400 people charging at you with your eyelashes. You're lifting your rifle, you're aiming, not there, that's the wrong person to aim at, and it's just like, so
aim left, George. No, my left. No, George, that's still not my left. Yeah. Oh God, that's brilliant. There was so I also, just going into then the porridge scene, which is I remember vividly the night before really struggling to learn my lines for this, because it was, you pissed on the king, I pissed on the porridge. Porridge was pissing on the king. So everything began with a P. Pissed on porridge. I just, for the life of me. And we did one rehearsal where I just couldn't for the life of me get it out. And then for some reason, Christoph was like, oh, we'll shoot you first, like me. We'll do your coverage first. And I was going, please don't. Like, go to George, go to Noemi.
I remember that now, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, please, I haven't got my lines down. And we went for one take and it all came out. Like, my brain went, we'll put it in the right order this time. And I just did it. And Christoph said, do you want to go again? And I said, no.
So then things, I remember. No, because I remember. To be fair, bless you, you never said that you hadn't got the lines down. But I just remember you being like, when Christoph suggested you go first, you were like, no, I just... But you didn't say it was about lines. And then we did it. And I was so confused because you did one take and you were like... That's it. Absolutely amazing. No. You're not getting better than that. Go on, move on to George now.
It's the luck. It's the massive luck of the draw when you are freaking out about lines, like talking to Sarah about you saying about like just the rush of the thing. I was so like, oh my God, like this is a great scene and it's so well written. And Simon was there with this and everyone's just looking and it's like a little dance and I had to get the feather. There was so much business a bit. Couldn't for the life of me get it. And then we just got the Steadicam up like Christoph does and just shot it. And I walked around the table, picked up the feather, did the thing, did the whole look, walked away, give Noemi a kiss and walked out. And then I can remember standing there and it was like, I've done it. Oh my God. Like, do you want to go again? Don't mess with the system. No, I do not. One take and done. I'm out. So I was watching it back and Julie, my wife, was watching it with me and she was like, that's really like, that's a really great scene. And I was like, I just blagged it. I just blagged the whole thing, as I tended to do. Right. So listen, before we go, I'm going to run through a couple of my great lines of dialogue. And there's one from you, Sarah, which I'm going to get you to finish with, if that's okay. So I'll say it to you and then you can say it. So there's some great lines. Obviously, we talked about "You will not be alone," which is the Fabian line to the Parthenay. Colbert has a great line, which is, "He only sketches when he's upset," which I think is...
I know, I love that line.
Which is like a tantrum child, like he's with his crayons.
He designs gardens when he's upset.
He's in architect mode. Chevalier comes in to Henriette and says, "You know, misery suits you," which is a great line.
Oh, it's so good.
"You know, misery suits you." And then he also says to Sophie, "It is time to learn what to do with those appalling flippers you call feet." I just think the writers had a great time with Evan and Chevalier. George, you have one. Have you got the notes in front of you?
"Your father's mess. Fix it."
Yes, "Your father's mess," which as your blood is pumping out of your head, which I think is great, like "your father's mess." And then obviously, "I know you, you used to know me from Moncourt." George, you have another one. Do you want to read that one for me?
"Life is more than love and marriage is more than duty."
Which I think is kind of backward, but okay, Louis. You just go, okay, fine, sure. And then obviously you pissed on your brother, but I pissed on the king. But as we are going to say goodbye, Sarah Winter, you have been an amazing guest, hasn't she, George?
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
No, the gaping pause.
Is there a gaping pause? I literally came in. So there must be a delay or something.
Oh, delay, my man. So, Sarah, you have this wonderful line, which I think beautifully sums up Louise de Valier. And I was wondering if you've got it in front of you, if you've got the line in front of you, or shall I?
I don't have it in front of me, but I think I know which one it is.
Yeah, so I'm not going to give you a cue, and this is a test now. And if you don't pass the test, then, to say goodbye to Sarah Winter, to the wonderful, effervescent Louise de Valier. Over to you, Sarah.
"Release me to God's care."
Brilliant.
Is that right?
Yes, she did it.
Is that right? Louise's soft voice.
Yes. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. And thank you so much for
coming.
Thank
you very, very much for coming on.
Thanks for doing this, guys. It's so fun and it's so lovely to sort of look back on it all. So, you guys
amazing.
Are
amazing. Thank you, Sarah Winter. Goodbye.
Woo! Bye. Bye.
Well, what did you think? How was that? How was episode 4 for you, George?
I thought that was lovely. It felt like...
That's sweet.
Yeah. It was good. It was just great. I don't know what... every time I'm like, oh, that was amazing. It was like the best therapy session I've ever had.
Do you know what? No, do you know what it's going to be? There's going to be this huge surprise when we have a really bad episode. Because so far we've had brilliant guests. We've had people that are really open and honest and giving amazing anecdotes for the people that are listening. And we're just going to be really surprised. And do you know who? And do you know who I think is going to be? That's going to be the arsehole. It's going to be
Evan.
He's just going to be.
That's the warm up.
He's going to give nothing. Like his usual humour is going to be gone.
In all seriousness, I was so impressed at how much like prep she had done. Like not just for the job, which made me feel terrible about how much research I did for Louis, but like, you know, Sarah just really, it's really nice to talk to people who are really invested in what they do, isn't it?
100%. I also just, you know, it's, she really was. I think because season 3 obviously is closer to us in time, right? There's that thing about season 3 for me is that it's obviously the last thing that we did with the show. But like, I'm really enjoying doing this this sort of rewatch and bring people on that are specific to season one, because it was so long ago, but like you just you remember that they have completely different perspectives about what we had. I mean, you were in pretty much every day, either in scenes together or doing very separate things, but you forget like that there's a whole palace of actors basically that are just, you know, doing really brilliant work, you know?
Yeah.
Good. Well, that was thanks again. Honestly, just remember that I have the power to kick you off as co-host, right? Just remember, you just start contributing a bit more. Anyway, listen, we have the wonderful patrons of the Conversation podcast, and we have some shout outs before we say goodbye. George, do you want to go with number one?
Yes. Thank you so, so much to Darlene.
And Nicole.
And Daniela.
And Karen.
And Nadra.
And Karen, we could not be doing this podcast without your support. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I'm going to go and change a dirty diaper.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's my job now. That's what I've become. So that's how I'm going to sign off on this episode. George, yeah. I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Yeah, you too. I can't wait. I can't turn my camera around. I wish I could show you my view. Can I? Maybe.
Do it. Go on, do it. No?
The video gets released, doesn't it?
The video gets released, yeah, exactly. Oh.
I'm up a mountain.
Oh, George, we're very good. Well, listen, I'm going to go change a diaper and you can go off on your mountain trip. How's that?
Sounds lovely. Enjoy diaper changing. Bye. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, listeners.
And we will see you next episode.
Soon. Bye. Absolute gold.